Chapter 16. Captain's biscuits, which are always a moist and jovial sort of viand,
a plate of oranges cut up small and gritty, with powdered sugar, and a highly geological homemade cake. The magnitude of these preparations quite took away Tom Pinch's breath, for though the new pupils were usually let down softly, as one may say, particularly in the wine department, which had so many stages of declension, that sometimes a young gentleman was a whole fortnight in getting to the pump. Still, this was a banquet, a sort of Lord Mayor's feast in private life, a something to think of, and hold on by, afterwards. To this entertainment, which apart from its own intrinsic merits, had the additional choice quality that it was in strict keeping with the night, being both light and cool, Mr. Pecksniff besought the company to do full justice. Martin, he said, will seat himself between you two, my dears, and Mr. Pinch will come by me. Let us drink to our new inmate, and may we be happy together. Martin, my dear friend, my love to you. Mr. Pinch, if you spare the bottle we shall quarrel. And trying in his regard for the feelings of the rest, to look as if the wine were not acid, and didn't make him wink, Mr. Pecksniff did honor to his own toast. This, he said, in allusion to the party, not the wine, is a mingling that repays one for much disappointment and vexation. Let us be merry. Here he took a captain's biscuit. It is a poor heart that never rejoices, and our hearts are not poor. No. With such stimulants to merriment, did he beguile the time, and do the honors of the table, while Mr. Pinch, perhaps to assure himself that what he saw and heard was holiday reality, and not a charming dream, ate of everything, and in particular disposed of the slim sandwiches to a surprising extent. Nor was he stinted in his draughts of wine, but on the contrary, remembering Mr. Pecksniff's speech, attacked the bottle with such vigor that every time he filled his glass anew, Miss Charity, despite her amiable resolves, could not repress a fixed and stony glare, as if her eyes had rested on a ghost. Mr. Pecksniff also became thoughtful at those moments, not to say dejected. But as he knew the vintage, it is very likely he may have been speculating on the probable condition of Mr. Pinch upon the morrow, and discussing within himself the best remedies for colic. Martin and the young ladies were excellent friends already, and compared recollections of their childish days to their mutual liveliness and entertainment. Miss Mercy laughed immensely at everything that was said, and sometimes, after glancing at the happy face of Mr. Pinch, was seized with such fits of mirth as brought her to the very confines of hysterics. But for these bursts of gaiety, her sister, in her better sense, reproved her, observing, in an angry whisper, that it was far from being a theme for jest, and that she had no patience with the creature, though it generally ended in her laughing too, but much more moderately, and saying that indeed it was a little too ridiculous and intolerable to be serious about. At length it became high time to remember the first clause of that great discovery made by the ancient philosopher, for securing health, riches, and wisdom, the infallibility of which has been for generations verified by the enormous fortunes constantly amassed by chimney sweepers, and other persons who get up early, and go to bedbeddams. The young ladies accordingly rose, and having taken leave of Mr. Chuzzlewit with much sweetness, and of their father with much duty, and of Mr. Pinch with much condescension, retired to their bower. Mr. Pecksniff insisted on accompanying his young friend upstairs for personal superintendence of his comforts, and taking him by the arm, conducted him once more to his bedroom, followed by Mr. Pinch, who bore the light. Mr. Pinch, said Pecksniff, seating himself with folded arms on one of the spare beds. I don't see any snuffers in that candlestick. Will you oblige me by going down and asking for a pair? Mr. Pinch, only too happy to be useful, went off directly. You will excuse Thomas Pinch's want of polish, Martin, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, with a smile of patronage and pity, as soon as he had left the room. He means well. Apostrophe, he is a very good fellow, sir. Apostrophe, oh, yes, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff. Yes. Thomas Pinch means well. He is very grateful. I have never regretted having befriended Thomas Pinch. Apostrophe, I should think you never would, sir. Apostrophe, no, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff. No. I hope not. Poor fellow, he is always disposed to do his best, but he is not gifted. You will make him useful to you, Martin, if you please. If Thomas has a fault, it is that he is sometimes a little apt to forget his position. But that is soon checked. Worthy soul, you will find him easy to manage. Good night. Apostrophe, good night, sir. Apostrophe, by this time Mr. Pinch had returned with the snuffers. And good night to you, Mr. Pinch, apostrophe said Pecksniff. And sound sleep to you both. Bless you. Bless you. Apostrophe, invoking this benediction on the heads of his young friends with great fervor, he withdrew to his own room, while they, being tired, soon fell asleep. If Martin dreamed at all, some clue to the matter of his visions may possibly be gathered from the after pages of this history. Those of Thomas Pinch were all of holidays, church organs, and seraphic Pecksniffs. It was some time before Mr. Pecksniff dreamed at all, or even sought his pillow, as he sat for full 2 hours before the fire in his own chamber, looking at the coals and thinking deeply. But he, too, slept and dreamed at last. Thus in the quiet hours of the night, one house shuts in as many incoherent and incongruous fancies as a madman's head. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.